And hello, this is Chris Parker with the Business Simplicity Podcast. And I just had a lovely conversation with Charlotte Mader, who's a coach. And oftentimes she's working with people that we would refer to as neurodiverse versus neurotypical. And we get into what is neurodiversity. We're thinking about autism and high intelligence and dyslexia. And how can you make the workplace, say, more inclusive for these types of people? And we also talk about some of her other practices that she works with groups in companies, like listening bubbles, which is a really interesting intervention when a group is going through a stressful time, like a transformation, and they need to open up their communication. So it was super interesting, but you're gonna have to listen to learn about listening bubbles. So Charlotte, why would it be really valuable for people to listen to the conversation?
Well, we talked about different ways of thinking and how neurodivergent people can really contribute in the workplace, how we can help them to contribute more, and also how organizations can really benefit from different ways of thinking and how they can really create the space for neurodiversity.
The Business Simplicity Podcast, where leaders share their most successful strategies and the failures that inspired them, so business owners and managers can avoid the suffering and reap the benefits. With your host, Chris Parker.
And welcome back to the Business Simplicity Podcast. This is Chris Parker. I'm having a conversation with Charlotte Mader, who is a coach, and she focuses on neurodiverse people. She's also a member of the Enablers Network, as am I. And we are going to wrestle with a bit, you know, what is neurodiversity and how can that be a superpower for people at work? And how can we perhaps create spaces at work for, yeah, these very special people to contribute incredibly, you know? So let's have fun with this. Charlotte. Maybe in your own words, can you just share a little bit, what is it that you do?
Hey, Chris, thank you for having me on your podcast. So I'm a professional coach for individuals and for companies, and I coach neurodivergent people who are aware or may not be aware that they are neurodivergent. So that captures people who are on the autism spectrum, people who have ADHD, so attention deficit disorder with or without hyperactivity, and also people who have high intelligence, so we could call them high intellectual potential, and some also who are dyslexic. So I coach them on different life goals or job goals. So like finding their next professional step, or, you know, changing location, changing their lifestyle, and also working on their relationship to themselves.
And can you unpack it a bit more? Like, how did you get into this practice? Like what is your inner drive or motivation that would have you focus in this space?
So in terms of coaching, you mean, or?
Well, coaching neurodivergent people. Yeah. How did you get there?
Well, initially I was coached by my last company in Paris when I worked in the baby food industry. And I was coached by a person who helped me with my leadership, you know, to develop my leadership at work. And it really helped me to take off the mask that I was wearing at work, you know, pretending to be really strong, pretending to be perfect, that I had all the answers. Throughout the coaching sessions, we used transactional analysis, which is a coaching topic that helps you understand how you behave in the workplace. And I just loved all the process behind the coaching session. So then I hired a coach for myself to change career. And then I ended up in an NLP training. So that's neuro-linguistic programming. And in that training, we practiced, you know, clarifying objectives one-on-one. And that's when I thought, okay, that's what I want to do in my life. Help people clarify what they want and help them get there. And then when I started coaching, as my new career, I realized that people who came to me naturally were people who were neurodivergent. I didn't advertise it at all, actually. But that's the kind of profiles who came to me for advice and for coaching sessions on, you know, different topics. And then I started reading more about neurodiversity and buying all kinds of books on autism, on high intelligence. And then I realized, wow, I really want to help these people specifically because they actually have a, you know, a tendency to jump from idea to idea to diverge actually very easily. And they also feel quite different to neurotypical people. So I help them, you know, be more at ease with who they are and what their specificities are and how they can really value this difference that they feel.
And you, yeah, in a way gave me an incredible gift a few months back where we were able to write an article or a blog post about neurodiversity as a superpower for organizations. And my motivation was my niece in my family, who's on the spectrum, and I'd just come back from a trip over to the US and seeing how the, you know, this person is so genuine, so human, so smart, yet also, you know, is really, you know, suffering in a way and trying to, you know, seeking to find that connection in that place. And then I got on this tangent of, you know, like, you know, understanding that people on the spectrum can sometimes be really good in analytical work, like software testing and things like that. And I've went down that rabbit hole, and apparently there's some companies that are specialized in hiring people like that, who think like that, and create a space, a working environment for people like that. And it was really fun to learn more about that when we wrote that article together. And I'll put the link to the article in the show notes of this. But calling someone neurodiverse can be many, many different things, and to different levels of degree. How do you, I don't know, I don't want to say diagnose, but how do you identify if someone is, you know, has some difference in their way of thinking? Because that's basically what we're, the way their brain is wired, you know, that's basically what we're talking about. How do you know that?
Yeah, you're right. It's really about the brain functioning differently to the norm. I don't actually do tests myself because they should be done with psychiatrists or psychotherapists. So often clients come and they already know that they've been diagnosed. Or for people who don't know, I don't raise it as a topic in the sessions, but I base it on my experience and on the all the books that I've read on the topic. I can easily identify some signs, such as the way they think, and the way they can often doubt themselves. You know, neurodivergent people tend to have a low self-esteem. Not all of them, but it's a tendency, and they can also show some kind of hypersensitivity, which makes them more sensitive to their environments. And for example, when their boss or a colleague speaks to them in a very direct way, or you know, something they hadn't expected, they can be really sensitive, and it can impact them much more than I would say neurotypical people.
I can see that definitely in my life, meaning both of my boys have been measured, you know, as high IQ, one more than the other, but definitely across that, whatever, that 130 line. And both are diagnosed with dyslexia. And what I find is well, I don't find anything. What I'm observing is they are having to find their way, meaning the you know, educational systems are anyways one size fits none. You know, it's unlikely an educational system will fit perfectly for anyone, or even a work environment for that matter. And what I'm finding is they're having to find their own coping mechanisms, that, you know, lean into their own strengths. Definitely sensitive to the awareness of difference. I have a friend and colleague who is a very successful, smart, vastly smarter than me, head of technology, we'll just call it that, and dramatically dyslexic. And that manifests in his spelling. And what he's actually done is he's just trained his organization that don't worry about my spelling. You know, I will write what I write. It'll be good enough for you to understand what I mean. And I'm not going to work on making it perfect, because that's just a waste of time for me. And so if we're communicating, if I'm able to write down enough words in the right letters in the right order that you can understand, it's not that bad. You know, he's quite articulate, but he just trained his environment to not worry about it. I mean, you know, with him, that's not the thing that we need to worry about. Focus on the task at hand. And so what I really see is people adapting, but I guess, what would you call, you know, neurotypical people also have to adapt as well, but maybe it's just a bit of a more of a challenge for neurodiverse people. Is that the kind of challenge that you wrestle with people on how to fit?
Yeah, exactly. How to fit in a group, in a collective, and how to adapt to the group. But actually what I found is most people over adapt to the collective that they're in order to be accepted, in order to be loved. And they do that from a very, very early age. So by the time they reach 20 or 30 years old, they have completely over-adapted, and they don't realize what their real needs are, because they've been so used to adapting all the time that it can happen that they forget their needs and who they really are. Have you had kind of observations?
Actually, I'm going to give it back to you. I'm like with some of your coaching, obviously without going into specifics or identifying anyone, is there any examples that you can share that, you know, through your work or through their own work, probably more, you know, it's, you're coaching someone on their own work. What kind of shift have you seen? Like someone came in tremendously stuck and frustrated and then left with some different mindset outlook, is, you know, do you have something, you know, a success story like that?
Yeah, I can think of a customer who's actually, she's a pianist and a singer. And she was really, really nervous on stage. And she was singing with another musician. And she was so focused on making the audience happy that she even forgot to drink water throughout the show. And she was, forgetting basic needs, you know, like what will they think if I drink a sip of water in between songs? And what will my partner think? I need to make him happy. And, it's really about coming back to what can help me perform at my best. And how can I try not to please everyone all the time? How can I focus on me?
Well, yeah, for me, this is, you know, this isn't for any neurotypical or neurodivergent, but my belief is, my knowing is, you must love and care and respect yourself so that you can love and care and respect for others. And that's a, that's life's work right there to realize that.
Yeah.
If you simply
and
give,
you know, one of the simple questions that I ask in my coaching session is, what do you truly need right now?
Mm-hmm.
What are you trying to hide from other people about yourself? And I have also I'm coaching someone who's on the autism spectrum. And what comes out in the sessions usually is that he has some kind of disorders in his movements, in the way he speaks. And he's always saying, oh, I need to be like everyone else. I need to hide my issues. And I challenged him back and asked, what if you didn't have to hide anything? What if you could really be yourself? What would the consequence be? And I think if you start to love who you are for your weaknesses as well, you can be more, you know, vulnerable and also, you know, probably people will like you even more for that if you really accept who you truly are.
I imagine maybe some people won't, but good. Meaning, I think if you express yourself to someone and they don't like that, or it's not for them because their journey is on a different wavelength and different vibration. Well, good, good. You know, you do you. I'll do me, and off we go. And I think that's also a gift. Meaning, you know, burnout for me was once described as. Because you called it masks, and in work environments, stress and burnout can come in. And the way it was described to me was, imagine walking, I can hardly even do it, but walking with your neck, you know, sort of at a weird tilt all the time. And just like 24/7 walking in this weird position. It takes so much energy and it makes you feel so awkward. And then just the ability to express yourself as yourself. And so I imagine being able to identify those masks and being more conscious of them and maybe not tearing them all down all at once, but just be more conscious of them and deciding on when and what, and hopefully finding places where you can really shine. So, but, there's another dimension that, you know, as far as neurodiversity and difference of brain function. But there could also be a line related to mental health. And as coaches, you know, mental health is not the domain that we should be walking into because, you know, people need professional trained, you know, therapy for these things. How do you navigate that? Meaning, where's that line for you? How do you differentiate if this is a brain functioning topic versus a mental health issue?
Actually, I mean, everyone can have a mental health issue in their life. Doesn't matter if they're autistic or you know, if they have ADHD. But what we find is neurodivergent people have a higher risk of having a, you know, a mental exhaustion because the environment around them can be exhausting. You know, a lot of stimulation, a lot of information that they capture more clearly, this hypersensitivity, it can all be really tiring. And also this overadaptation that I was talking about. If you consistently forget about your needs, you have a higher risk of having a burnout. And you don't necessarily need to go and see a therapist. I mean, if there are signs of serious depression, of course, the line has to be drawn between therapy and coaching. I haven't had that case many time actually, but I think both approaches are very complementary. If you want to understand your wounds, your current wounds, and dig into the past to understand it, that would be more therapy. But if you want to focus on the future, starting from the present and build an action plan to get to your goal, then coaching would be more adapted.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I find is as I'm orienting on someone's coaching needs, in the last couple of months, I've had to do this is realize that, wait a second, the, you know, cause I'm more of a business coach, right? So it's you know, helping people in their business context, which obviously is a very emotional thing. And obviously everyone has their traumas, and we are all, you know, creatures of our experience. That's the human condition. And, you know, I have raised my hand early on and say, hey, you know, I can imagine this path will go into your past, will go into your relationship, you know, outside of work. And that's not my work. And I've had to remind that a couple times, to, you know, because like, oh, what do I, you know, what I should do? I'm like, sorry, this is just exactly. Not my work. It would be unfair, it'd be unprofessional, it would be unwise for me to walk down that path with you, because I'm just literally not trained.
Yes, of course, and I agree with you. But I do a lot of work on emotions, and usually people can have an overwhelming mind and tend to forget about their body and their emotions. And getting into this and asking, what do you feel right now and where is it in your body? It can create awareness on what the actual feeling is, and really coming back to the present and what's happening right now in the body and in terms of emotions, yeah, can create a new path.
Mm. Let me just jump into it. A fun technique that I'm refining related to leading from love, I'm not sure if I've explained this to you a bit before, but what I find is when people are going through my simple business design process, which you've gone through, so maybe we can talk about that a little bit. Occasionally there's a level of stuck that needs to go deeper. Oftentimes it's, you know, people go through that process and they're sort of regurgitating the answers that they think they've had, that they should have, and whatever. And the reason I ask the questions a little bit differently is to try to get the MBA mind out of it and get the human mind into it, get the real self into it. But sometimes they're really stuck. And to simplify the method really a lot is I have them look at this question or this dilemma from three different dimensions. There's a transactional, pure business. There's a relational, meaning our relation with others in the business, your customers. And then what I call intuitional, I'm not sure if it's the right description yet, but what is your inner guidance system? And what I find is if I have people look at this from these three different dimensions exclusively, then the connection between that I call love. I'm not sure if that's, you know, not romantic love, but it's an acceptance, a coherence, a grace. And if you allow all of those to be true, what emerges? And oftentimes, yeah, something new can emerge. Like, oh, well, you know, what I would love to do is this. Like, ah, okay. And it's maybe just asking questions in a different way. I loved your question about what do you need right now? I can imagine that can unlock. Because how rarely do we think about that? Like, what do I actually need right now?
We often think about the needs of others.
Not
so much about our needs. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in this case, you know, transactional, relational, intuitional, a lot about the needs of the others or the needs of the business. You know, I need to do this because the results. And then very often, you know, the one that sacrificed is, well, wait, that doesn't feel good to me. What do I need right now?
Yeah. So, I think what you call love, I would call it alignment between body, heart, and mind. And when all these dimensions are aligned, then you're more anchored and more focused on what you're doing, and also more happy.
Isn't that love?
I guess.
I don't know. I use the word alignment for my business design work, so I've already used that word somewhere else. But it's I don't know. It's fun to explore these things. So we've been talking a lot about the individuals. I'm curious about the space and if you're working in an organization, and let's just put it in a business context, it could be a home context, I don't know, let's focus on a business context, and there are some neurotypical and neurodivergent people running around, that might not even be aware of these terms or these differences. And then they might be clashing or judging or whatever. And we know that all of those people, neurotypical, neurodivergent, across any spectrum, can add tremendous value. I think that's just a given. You know, people can be incredibly valuable regardless of how their brain's functioning. How can you raise awareness for that or create this space if you're working near and with somebody who has a different brain function pattern than you have?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think neurodiversity is a really recent topic, actually. It's starting to be quite big in the US and Canada, but it's fairly new in Europe. And I've seen some companies in France just starting to make it a topic as part of diversity and inclusion. So companies like Orange in France, they've started to create some little groups within the company with neurodivergent people, and they organize sessions to sensitize the whole company on how can we create the space for these people who function differently. As you said, if you have people who have different brain functioning, then it will increase your bottom line results as well. You know, it's part of cognitive diversity. If you have two people thinking differently, you'll get further on a specific topic than if you have two similar brains. So I think companies can act on several levels. First, recruitment. You know, think about what specific skills do you need for some key roles, you know, for example, creative roles or problem-solving roles, where neurodivergent people may actually be more effective than neurotypical people. And there are new recruitment platforms like Neurodiversity Employment Network and OTPIC, which is a new recruitment platform for autistic people. You know, they're creating a link between autistic who actually have the highest rate of unemployment overall and companies who are engaged in, you know, sustainable development or human development. So recruitment is an idea. You can also have a more inclusive management, meaning, you know, having conversations. How can we help you perform at your best? How can we accommodate your work schedule or your space? Do you need to be in a closed office? Do you need to be in an open space? What conditions can allow you to really have good creativity and a high level of focus? And just like companies start to create workshops on, you know, diversity and inclusion and raising awareness on our cognitive biases, you can also do that with neurodiversity by, you know, welcoming experts on neurodiversity in your company to talk about it and just show the different types of brain functioning. Mm.
I have to plug, if anyone is interested, I'm sure they can contact Charlotte to give such a presentation, and she'd be delighted to do that. What was also coming, I think that'd be really valuable for people. What came alive in me when you were describing that was yes, the thinking can be elevated and improved overall if people are thinking very differently. And without a level of maturity and awareness, that can also be very stressful, because if everyone is thinking differently, chaotically, it can be really quite frustrating. When are we going to start, you know, converging somewhere? And I think this awareness and creating the space, when I do business design work, there's oftentimes the problem moment where it's actually really good to have divergent thinking to find, you know, explore different dimensions of the problem. And then there's usually some sort of orientation and brainstorming, but then eventually you need to start converging and saying, hey, you know, well, let's bring it back to ideally the most optimal or efficient solution or the one we feel, you know, best enough now. And I imagine that it requires some conversations and some dialogue to not only understand that we have different ideas, but our brain functions working differently. And so maybe you need to work in a little bit of a different pattern. Like for myself, as I would call it an extreme introvert, at the summer university a couple of weeks ago, as you well know, when, you know, something happened that I found very, you know, emotionally triggering, somebody decided to leave the network. Mm-hmm. And, one of the other coaches, I think doing an incredible gift for the group, decided to process that. But for me, that was actually the worst case scenario, meaning, you know, my natural path would, you know, because we're also performing, you know, we were in our flow, but to, my natural path would have been to, you know, go into my cave at my safe time when I'm alone, so I can start processing all of this stuff probably overnight. And I would put it all, and then I would come back and have maybe a bit more control and maybe, you know, but then when we just really jumped into it and started processing it, honestly, mm-hmm. I just found that overwhelming, because there's like, wait, there's too many connections going on at different, you know, all in this big jumble at that moment. And typically what I would have done is like, okay, let me take this whole knot of confusing energy right now, put it aside for a while, go through it. And then eventually, you know, sit, you know, and you know, later what I did is I just walked up to the beautiful mountain and sat there and interestingly, one of the questions that came up was, what do I need? You know, like, okay, what do I need with this? Why, you know, and I started to pick things apart, you know, like, okay, well, you know, it's really good that person left because of that, but does that have anything to do with me? It's like, oh, it's sad that he left because of that. Okay, whatever, you know, all the other different, you know, issues. And, you know, it was, and what I liked about it was I feel in our space, and this is the kind of work that I think we like to do with organizations is we created the space for people to check out, you know, and maybe not everyone fits in every space, you know, and we also create a space that, you know, with certain competencies and certain, attributes of, then yes, let's try to be as diverse and inclusive as possible. And we talk about that. And when traumatic things happen, yes, we should process it. And through that, you know, I was also able later to come back and say, hey, this is what happened within me at that moment. And that also, I believe everyone that was there knows me 100 times better than, you know, if I was just on stage performing, which is probably what you knew before that. So yeah, there's personalities, there's, you know, personality types, there's neurodivergent, you know, brain functioning stuff, there's human emotion going on. For me, this is the magic of business. You know, this is the magic of life. So it's
Yeah, I like the fact of allowing people to check out and maybe, you know, while preserving psychological safety. So, you know, it's okay if someone doesn't fit in. And what the most important thing is for this person to be okay to express what's happening for them and how the environment can be improved for this person in the future. How can we be more inclusive and more aware of people's needs in general?
Isn't that what this is all about? Just being aware of people's needs? And I guess it starts with your own needs is what, you know, you can only make people aware of your needs if you know them. It's
Yeah. But you know what I like about sociocracy is the fact that you allow people to contribute in the way they want, you know, by joining circles. I mean, it's for them to choose where they want to contribute. And it allows them to focus on their needs and their topics of interest, and then join where they feel they can really help. No one is forced. It's it comes back to having this natural drive, this natural drive. Yeah.
Well, natural driver,
To
yeah, desire to contribute, to be a part of.
exactly.
And not everyone has that drive at that moment because people might just have other stuff going on in their life. And but maybe to give that a little context in enablers, it's a network of say 30 plus coaches of very different types, all leading or striving to lead in their space. So there's a level of desire for professionalism and performance that is that I love it. Makes me stand on my toes to perform in such an amazing group. And one of the questions we had was, how can we do this without managers? We don't want a pyramidal, hierarchical, manager driven. And in my work in agile, sociocracy and holacracy were floating around as a potential model. And so we've started to adopt a very basic version that instead of teams, we have circles, and a circle should only exist if it has something to do. And people can check into the circle if they want to contribute. And then, of course, it's a consent-based decision process. And so we played around with that, that people were able to nominate, people for roles, and now they can nominate proposals on what we can work on. And it's for me, it just feels good. It feels a very inclusive way of working. I'm certainly not a master of it. That's what, and that's how I'm playing with it. And I have been able to sit in on some holacracy meetings before, and I was just in awe of how natural and how inclusive and how free flowing these meetings were. It was like, wow, this is something different is happening here. And I just wish to check into that. So, and thank you for playing that game, because it's a bit of an experiment and it seems to be working.
I agree with you. It really enhances inclusivity. And usually you start a meeting by, expressing how you are right now and what you need for this meeting to be a success. And just allowing people to speak at the beginning of the meeting and not having only the extroverted or the bosses to speak is great for introverts and for people who need to contribute from the start. So yeah, it's very inclusive and I would recommend companies to look into this.
Yeah, so that's an example of how it can be inclusive, and we can create the space. And I'm starting to wrap up. And Charlotte, we have a invitation for the audience, meaning we're really curious and to learn from them, and we're hoping that people that are inspired by this can share their insights and experiences. Can you share what we would love to hear back from the audience? And for anyone who's listening, in the show notes, we'll put a link to the LinkedIn post around this. And if you can go, just leave your comments right there on LinkedIn. So, but Charlotte, what are we looking to hear back from the audience about this if they're so inspired?
Yeah, so do you have any advice on how we can create awareness on neurodiversity in the workplace? And also, how can we help neurodiverse people to contribute and add more value? So it'd be great to hear from the audience on this topic.
Yeah, so if you have any ideas, examples, things that you've seen, and I'd just like to underline this is a genuine question, meaning we were refining what we might ask. And this would be so helpful for Charlotte and I to understand more about this. And so we are just genuinely interested in, hey, anyone out there, do you have, ideas or examples of things that have worked? And please share that, and do that on the LinkedIn post when we publish this. So, Charlotte Mader, thank you so much. If people would like to get in touch with Charlotte, she coaches individuals and also organizations, and not only on neurodiversity topics, but she's just a general coaching, and as well as well, what are the other things that you coach? I'll let you share it. Like for organizations, you're involved in other dimensions as well.
Yes, so I run burnout prevention workshops, And we use a soft coaching method called the listening bubbles. And it's great because it lasts only between 10 and 20 minutes. And you have a script of coaching questions. And it leaves a lot of silence. So the person can really express, you know, about their anxiety, about something that's on their mind right now, and that they need to talk about. And you have someone really carefully listening to what's being said. And by the end of this listening bubble, you have a clearer action plan, you know, and it can be something like, oh yeah, I need to go and talk to my colleague about this, or I need to go and talk to my husband. And you just have a more focused plan at the end of it, and it helps to reduce the level of stress and anxiety.
Is that an individual thing or a group thing?
It's a group workshop, but then the bubbles are one-on-one.
Ooh. And when would someone be like a group be triggered to call Charlotte and say, hey, Charlotte, we need to experience a listening bubble intervention? What would be the problem we're trying to solve there?
When they need to have, you know, to free what's not being said, allow people to speak about, you know, things they're worried about speaking in the workplace usually. And this workshop really creates a space for people to express themselves and reduce stress. So yeah, whenever you have something going on in a team, and when the anxiety level is quite high, you know, because there's a cultural change, transformation in the company that's happening, or when you have quite high competition, unexpected competition. So whenever there is, I guess, an external factor that wasn't expected and that creates, you know, new dynamics in the team, having this workshop will help to free how people speak.
I'm thinking, yeah, maybe we should have done a listening bubble as this podcast.
Yes, we should do one, definitely.
Maybe that's for another time. It's yes. Love it. So, and if people would like to learn more about Charlotte, you can find her at charlottemader.com. It's in French, but you can Google Translate it. It's fine. And as you can see, her English is perfect. And she's working with people, I think, all over Europe, maybe even all over the world, not sure. But check it out. So Charlotte Mader, thank you so much for joining. This has been absolutely lovely.
Yes. Thank you, Chris. It was great to speak to you.
Thank you for listening. Download the Simplicity Toolkit from ebullience.com to discover the power of the Simplicity Scan and Sprint. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite player.